that's got us all aglow. He's just a man and not a freak. Jolton Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio. We want you and I.
He tied the mark at 44.
Lake Effect Weekend continues now on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. When you talk about Italian-American baseball players, the name Joe DiMaggio immediately springs to mind. But Milwaukee writer Lawrence Baldassaro made the point in a past book that there are more names in the Italian-American baseball experience than that one luminary. The book was called Beyond DiMaggio.
Baldassaro's new book goes further than that and presents the stories of several generations of Italian-American ballplayers in their own words, spoken in interviews Baldassaro has conducted over the years. The new book is called Baseball Italian Style, and Larry Baldassaro is with us in the studio now. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So when did this all start? When did you first start seeking out ballplayers and speaking with them about their Italian heritage and the experience of being an Italian-American ballplayer?
The first interview I did with an Italian-American ballplayer, because I had written some about baseball before that, but in June 1993, the Yankees were in town. And one of the radio broadcasters was Phil Rizzuto. So I scheduled an interview with him, and the only reason I was doing that, it was going to be published in a baseball journal called Elysian Fields Quarterly. I had no idea then I was going to follow up on this, but thing was, the Scooter, as he was known, was such a great interview. I mean, you turned on your recorder, ask him a question, and sit back. He was fabulous. So I guess that kind of motivated me then to seek out others as they came through Milwaukee. And then at a certain point, the light finally dawned on me because I had written about Ted Williams, who was my boyhood hero. But here I am, the grandson of four Italian immigrants. I teach Italian. I love baseball. Why don't I write about Italians in baseball? And it turns out that virtually nothing had been written. So that's when I set out to write a book that became known as Beyond DiMaggio, which was the first extensive history of Italian Americans in baseball. And in the process of doing that, I conducted about 50 or more interviews with players, coaches, managers, et cetera, owners. And this is where it's come to.
Well, and I'm curious, the journalist in me read this and was, you know, really struck by how expansively some of these people talk about this part of their lives and their heritage, and, you know, comparing it to the experience I've had interviewing ballplayers who sometimes it's difficult to get, you know, a sentence of more than four or five words out of them, especially about something that's not linked directly to the game they just played, the game they're about to play, the games that they played in their past. How willing were these folks to talk about this part of who they are?
What's interesting, and this is not surprising, that the earlier ball players, and you know, I spoke to six players whose careers began in the 1930s, they were still very much connected to their heritage because they were the children of immigrants. The further removed you get from the immigrant generation, the less identity there is, especially after World War II when there was more intermarriage. People moved around more, so there's less connection to the family. So those early ball players were, you know, willing and eager to talk about their background. Everybody that I spoke to did. But as I say, the more contemporary players have less of a sense. More and more of them, I'd say maybe since the 70s on, tend to identify, and they're all, every one of them expressed pride in their Italian heritage, but they knew less about it. They didn't speak the language for the most part. They essentially identified themselves as Americans.
Right. The first people you speak with, I'm struck by the longevity that some of these guys had. You know, you spoke with Frank Grassetti, who, yeah, he was playing in the 30s.
1932. Yeah, he
started. They're at the time they broke in, it seems like there was something really distinctive about their place as Italian-American ballplayers that probably does not hold true in the same way today.
No, but it did. You know, the history of baseball is like the history of America. You can't talk about it without talking about immigration and ethnic succession. So as each ethnic group, especially from Europe, came in, the Germans, the Irish, you know, they face some reluctance, some skepticism, some obstacles about playing professional baseball. At the same time, baseball did offer to these children of immigrants, whether German, Irish, later Italians, Slavs, Jews, etc., that baseball provided one avenue to them to fulfill the American dream, because a lot of other avenues were not really open to them. So those early players, when they did break in, like Crosetti and others, they faced some prejudice, mainly in the form of ethnic slurs, which were part of the common vernacular at the time up until World War II and a little beyond, so much so that terms like Dago and WAP, which you would never see in print today, would appear in the New York Times. It was just part of the vernacular. So when these players broke in, some fans would, you know, holler these terms at them in a derogatory way. Several of the people that played in the 30s said that they would hear these fans yelling out, and they would hear it from players opposing teams. However, if it was used within the ball club by other Italians, then it was – not only was it not offensive, it was termed – it was a term of endearment.
You talk about players who came of age before World War II, and so many of these players were, you know, the children of immigrants, very recent immigrants. What was their family's attitude towards their wanting to pursue a career in baseball?
Look, the Italians who came here – knew nothing, but they brought no tradition of sports other than bocce. So the idea that their children could make a living playing a game that they considered a child's game and a waste of time was beyond them. So for the most part, parents were objecting. Sometimes you get the father who'd object and the mother who would support, or vice versa. So that was a sort of an internal obstacle to some of these people who broke into the game. You know, Papa Giuseppe DiMaggio thought that he had five sons and he wanted them all to go to be fishermen like him in San Francisco. And the two oldest brothers did. But then Vince, Joe, and Dom didn't want to be fishermen. They wanted to be ballplayers. Well, actually, Vince wanted to be an opera singer, but he ended up spending 10 years in the major leagues. Well, Dominic DiMaggio, when I spoke to him here in Milwaukee, said that, you know, his father would take Vince, the oldest son, take his spikes and his glove and throw them in the garbage can. And then mom would go pull them out before the next game. And then when Vince became a professional and made money, and this is in the Depression, and then Joe became a professional. Now Dom, the youngest, he said, my father came to me and said, when are you going to start playing baseball?
And I can't remember which player it was who his father spoke only broken English or little English at all. And he, you know, signed his first professional contract. And the father asks him how much it's for. And he says $36,000. And the father says, oh, my God, what a great country this is.
Right. That was Joey Amalfitano, 1954, signed as a bonus baby with the Giants. Yeah.
You mentioned DiMaggio and the DiMaggios. It's funny, your last book was called Beyond DiMaggio, but at the same time, the specter of DiMaggio looms really large in the lives of so many of these players, right up through Mike Piazza.
Absolutely. And I refer to DiMaggio as the patron saint of Italian-American fans and ballplayers. So many of the people in the book refer to him. Whether it was people who played with or against him in his era, or people who came later and talked about, you know, how their parents idolized this man, because here he was, an Italian, after the prejudice they had faced, and he was, you know, this huge star in the national pastime that gave them some hope that they could succeed. It gave them a sense of pride. And this was repeated over and over again by older players and younger ones as well. Yeah, his figure looms very large.
There are a number of players who describe the scene at, you know, going into games at Yankee Stadium and whole sections of people watching DiMaggio in the outfield more than they watch what's going on at home plate.
Right. Rico Petrocelli, who went on to become a Red Sox star and sat in the center field bleachers with his older brothers. And he said, I realized I was looking at the DiMaggio, and I looked around, and everybody was looking at DiMaggio. They weren't looking at the pitcher or the batter. He said that's how much of a hero he was.
With only a few exceptions, New York and San Francisco seemed like the places where many of these players grew up. And to that end, there were a couple of really influential ball fields that figure into the lives of some of these players that I wanted to ask you about. What can you tell us about Funston Playground, and that's in San Francisco, and the Parade Grounds in Brooklyn?
San Francisco was a hotbed of amateur baseball, even in the late 19th century. And, of course, the weather was good out there. And technically, I think there was less prejudice against minority groups in San Francisco, other than the Chinese, I would say, but certainly less than Italians and others encountered on the East Coast. So a lot of these kids just naturally gravitated to baseball. A lot of them who lived in what is now called Joe DiMaggio Field, which is in the North Beach playground where they played on concrete. That's where the DiMaggios got their start and others. And then Funston Field was just a couple of miles away, and that had several ball fields. So that's where you would go early in the morning, and there'd be games going on all day long. And that's where they developed. There were scouts there, and they signed them, particularly in the Pacific Coast League and the minor leagues. In New York, the parade grounds in Brooklyn was the place to play. And there's so many major leaguers who came out of there. The Torrey brothers, just to mention two. Sandy Koufax came out of there. Others as well. So those were just training grounds where you got a lot of attention. People knew the good ball players were there, and the scouts would come.
What surprised you most? I mean, these interviews took place over the course of, if my chronology is right, it sounds like about 25 years.
Right.
What surprised you most as you went back through all of the I would say tape in this business, but notebooks and notes that you took and considered these all under this one umbrella?
That's a good question. I guess for the older players, the biggest surprise was their memories. I mean, what the people in this book share beyond their common ethnic heritage is a lifelong passion for the game, whether they were players or owners. They maintain that. And the other thing is these incredible detailed memories of games long ago. And if you go and check the record book, usually they're right on target. So one example, Nino Bongiovanni, who had a very brief career in 38 and 39 playing for the Reds. And he was 94 years old when I interviewed him. He remembered when he was in the minor leagues in the mid-30s that he had a hitting streak going. I think he said it went up to 33 games. And then in one game, this official scorer took two hits, according to him, took two hits away. I hit hard ground balls. They should have been hits. He called them errors. And then so that broke my streak. And then I went on. I would have had a 56-game streak. And the surprising part is he remembered the name. I said, do you remember who? Yes, yes, Screwball Gregory. How could I forget? 70-something years later. So that you know.
Not that he's still bitter.
He didn't hold the grudge.
Sal Bando, I imagine you spoke with quite a bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Sal first as a player here, of course, and then as a general manager. But, you know, Sal was captain of the Oakland A's when they won those three consecutive series in 72 to 74. And their owner was the notorious Charlie Finley, who was very tight-fisted and lived in Chicago. He didn't live in Oakland. But Sal, as the captain, was the conduit. And there was a lot of contention between the A's and Finley because he wouldn't pay what he wouldn't charter flights for them. So Sal had a lot of stories about the give and take and how he had to be called up to the office to take Finley's calls and deal with him and so forth. And then, you know, here, the one story about Billy Martin, where Sal was the captain of the A's and Billy Martin was the manager of the Tigers. So they had a series on a Friday night. There was a brawl between the two teams. And Sal, as the captain, would bring the scorecard out to the umpires before the game, and Billy Martin would come out as the manager, and they would exchange the cards. So on a scorecard, you've got your starting lineup, and then you've got your other players, your bench players. So Martin hands in his lineup, and Sal looks at it, and under other players, he's got Rocky Marciano, Carmen Basile. He's got all these Italian fighters as his bench players. Sal got a kick out of that.
Are there players of Italian heritage that you did not get to speak with that you really would have wanted to? I mean, obviously, Joe DiMaggio is not in this book. You did speak with his brother, though.
Yeah, Joe passed away just before I started, you know, got the idea to write the history of Italians in baseball. But if I couldn't speak to Joe, having his brother Dom was, You know, Joe was pretty reticent. He was a little suspicious of people and so forth. Dom, when he came here for the 2002 All-Star game to Milwaukee, I was in touch with him before. He said, yeah, meet me when I get to the fan fest the day before the game. I did. He hadn't even gotten to the hotel yet. He says, come on over. Well, I settle into the hotel, and we chatted there. We went to dinner. I interviewed him. He was bright. He was articulate. He was cordial. He was a self-made millionaire as a businessman after he retired from baseball. But he couldn't have been more open. And then he said, well, what are you doing for breakfast tomorrow? So I went to the hotel. He was staying at the Hilton on Wisconsin Avenue. So I had breakfast with him, talking more, interviewing him. And then finally said, well, he says, are you going to the game, the All-Star game tonight? I said, well, I have a press pass. So, you know, I've got an extra ticket. Would you like to sit with me? I'm a Red Sox fan.
Right, yeah.
And Dom was, along with Ted Williams, one of my heroes as a very young kid. So here I am sitting in Miller Park up in what's now the Deuce section with these VIP former ball players, All-Stars, Hall of Famers like Bob Feller, watching the All-Star game with a man who played in seven of them. I'll never have a bad thing to say about Dominic DiMaggio.
Would you think there's room for someone out there to consider the more recent history of baseball through other immigrant experiences, whether it's the Polish immigrant experience or more recently something like the Dominican or even Asian countries?
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's been a couple of books about Jewish Jewish ball players. There's a film that was even done about it. Certainly, I think as time goes by and you have more and more Latino players, there's a whole body of work that could be done there because they come from several different countries in Latin America. And now the growing influx of Asians. I think now there's about 24% of major leaguers who were born outside the United States. So this is a growing phenomenon.
Well, Larry Baldessaro, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for sharing at least some of it with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Grandma's on my radio, on the television, watching Joe. She jerks the beard off of Grandpa's chin. Joe DiMaggio's done it again. Bump it out.
Larry Baldessaro's latest book is called Baseball Italian Style, Great Stories Told by Italian-American Major Leaguers from Crosetti to Piazza. Baldessaro is a professor emeritus of Italian at UW-Milwaukee, and he'll talk more about the book on Tuesday evening at Boswell Book Company.